Welcome to On The Record, the incredibly successful podcast series from the Two Mics and Audio Boom. Mm. I'm Mike Graham. Who are you?
I'm Mike Porky Parry, OK?
And what have you got for us today, Mr. Parry?
Well, let me tell you this. I'm going to start with a little, not a song, but a little line,
you're
OK?
You're not going to sing, are you?
Don't give up on me, baby.
Oh, it's David Soul.
Thank you very much indeed. Is the wife beater?
Well, I think there was an incident in which he was accused of being a wife beater. Yeah. I'm not sure that would be fair.
Well, in this week, he is 75 years of age.
75?
Absolutely. Blimey. Did you know he'd become a naturalised Briton?
I don't think I did know
because he loved this country as it was when he came here 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
Right.
And of course, he was one half, wasn't he, of one of the most successful cop shows of all time.
Well, what I was going to say to you was, rather than you singing Don't Give Up On Us Baby, which was a rather, I would have said, ill-thought-out sort of singing
career.
Well,
that was
career.
His song.
No, I know that, but it was rather ill-thought-out by him, singing career.
Yes.
I was going to say to you, rather than that, can you remember the Starsky and Hutch theme tune?
Da da da. No, that's CI5, isn't it? You know, are you able to source it? Maybe.
Well, I'm going to try.
Maybe you could source it while I go on to talk about the devastating tragedy that hit his colleague.
Yeah,
because
well, that was awful.
Although David Soul is 75 and he's had a few drink problems and all that kind of stuff along the way, was the other guy called Michael Paul Glazer?
Paul Michael Glazer.
Oh, right. Listen to this. Yeah, here you go. It's good. Sounds a bit messy.
It's a bit tinny, isn't it?
Well, no, not just that, but it doesn't sound like, you know, as distinctive as sort of, you know,
the
Sweeney.
You were too busy looking at Paul Michael Glazer's ridiculous cardigan.
Yeah, that's right.
That really big cardigan he used to wear.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was really woolly.
And the opening credits,
and he'd jump over the bonnet.
Exactly. The opening credits were so ridiculous, weren't they? You know, I mean, that became the focal point of comedian sketches for years, didn't it?
It did.
Sliding across the bonnet of a car, you know, to get in the driving seat and all that
and
kind of stuff.
And Huggy Bear and all the rest
Huggy Bear and all kind of stuff. But no, old Paul Michael Glazer, I mean... I think David Soul's had his problems. Did you say there was some physical contact with...
Well, there was certainly an incident where one of the women that he lived with, I can't remember if it was his wife or something, accused him of beating her up.
Right.
And so for a while, there was a bit of a shadow over him.
So it's an allegation.
Well, I think it might have been more than that.
Oh, OK. Yeah.
I do remember that he appeared at the West... The New End Theatre, which is a rather small theatre in Hampstead.
Oh, yes.
And I remember thinking, blimey, this was around about, I guess, probably late 80s, early 90s, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was, I mean, you know, we've played in a lot of theatres, right?
Yes.
As the Two Mics have. Mm. And it's even sort of, I mean, it's a bit bigger than Hen and Chickens.
Yes.
But not much.
Yes.
You know, and it's one of those kind of not West End theatres.
Yes.
And he was doing a sort of, you know, play in this little theatre in Hampstead.
Right.
And I thought, this is a bloke who was
Did you go and see him?
I didn't.
No.
But I just happened to see an advert.
Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah.
But I just thought to myself, this guy's in one of the biggest TV shows of all time.
Yeah.
Because it was.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah, it was.
I mean, everybody
watched it. It was massive. Hmm. And Sony, poor Michael Glazer, his wife goes into hospital for something, has a blood transfusion. It was at the start of the terror of AIDS.
That's right.
Nobody quite knew where AIDS came from or how to protect yourself against it.
Yeah.
She had a blood transfusion, which was full of AIDS. I think it killed her and their unborn baby, didn't it?
No.
Or her and one of her children like that.
I think she lived with AIDS for quite some time.
Right.
And I think I'm right in saying...
But the child was born with AIDS, wasn't it?
I think it might have been.
Yeah, you know, because a blood transfusion during birth or something like that.
It was all due to that thing called Factor VIII, which is what killed Arthur Ashe.
Yeah.
Factor VIII was a blood product which people were given when they went into hospital with blood transfusions. Mm. What it was a sort of an anti-clotting factor.
Yes.
So that if you were having a blood transfusion and you were on the operating table, in order to make the blood clot, which means so it doesn't just run out of your body, they'd give you this Factor VIII stuff. Well, they didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And they gave it to people in this country. There's still people in this country looking for compensation, by the way.
Yeah.
What they didn't say was that they had paid homeless people and junkies and all manner of
for
others.
Blood.
For blood.
That's right.
Right on the
streets, infected.
In the streets of America.
And they were infected with dirty needles.
And they were
they?
Infected with AIDS.
Yeah.
And they'd never bothered to check it.
Unbelievable.
I mean, I remember I went to Arthur Ashe's press conference in which he announced he had AIDS.
Right.
It was the most chilling thing you've ever seen.
And
it was
how long
really
did he live
sad.
After that?
Not long.
Really?
I think he was dead probably about within a year.
But you see, in those days, AIDS meant death.
Yeah.
But then they separated AIDS from HIV.
That's right.
And HIV then suddenly became treatable.
Yeah.
And the most
they also invented AZT, which was the drug which you can take which enables you to live with HIV.
Oh, right.
And stops it becoming full-blown AIDS. Okay. I became quite an expert on this only because I worked in America in the 80s after you went home. And it was the only story around.
Right, sure, yeah. So HIV, the most famous man who lives with that from the very start, who should have died, is Holly Johnson. Holly Johnson was the lead singer.
Also, what about remember Magic Johnson, who was the basketball player?
Yeah.
Who used to boast that he had slept with 1,000 women.
That's right. You know. He got AIDS and he thought he was going to die.
Yeah.
But he's still alive, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, he's still alive.
In fact, not only is he still alive, but I think he's still performing.
Yeah. No, not as a basketball player.
No, I don't mean him. I mean Holly Johnson, I think you're talking about.
Oh, no. We're talking about Magic Johnson. Because I was in America when the Magic Johnson one happened.
And, Magic Johnson, again, I'm pretty sure, is still alive.
What Holly Johnson did was this is a great Fleet Street story, which I may have told before. Holly Johnson announced that he had AIDS stroke HIV.
Yeah.
It still hadn't been separated in those days. In an interview in the Times Saturday magazine.
Yeah.
The editor of The Sun, who is a despicable runt, you know, who I later unfortunately had dealings with, sent a reporter to steal a copy of the Times, the Saturday Times magazine on a Thursday.
Right.
And on Friday, published the story, Holly Johnson has AIDS, because it was big news in those days, okay? Caused a huge, you know, battle
between the editors
of the Times and the Sun and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But got away with it. But what really distresses me a little bit about all this is that in the days when it happened, it was so frightening. Do you know that people would rob banks by walking into a bank? I'm talking about, well, you know, the homeless guy and all this kind of stuff. And they'd written on a piece of paper, they would pass the paper over. Like in the old days, bank robbers used to say, give me all your money.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really a thing. I mean, it happened a couple of times. It wasn't really something
give me all your money. I've got a gun in my bag. I'll blow your head off, right? All they did was they wrote it and then they handed it over and then they got the teller's hand, right, held the teller's hand on over an open desk, produced the note saying, give me all the money or I'll scratch you. I've got AIDS.
Yeah.
And that's a death sentence.
Or they would carry a syringe with infected blood.
Yeah, but all they had to do was scratch them.
Yeah, but that was one of those stories that happened maybe once.
I think it happened more than once.
Well, I don't think it did. I mean, I covered this extensively. I'm just checking up on the situation with Elizabeth Mayer, who was, in fact, Paul Michael Glaser's wife.
Oh, yeah.
She contracted AIDS. HIV, rather, as you quite rightly say, through a blood transfusion while giving birth to the couple's first child.
Unbelievable.
She didn't find out about that until 4 years later, at which time she'd also had another son who was found to be HIV positive. She and the first son died in 1988 and 94, but the other son, strangely, never developed it.
Right.
And Paul said, I have a rare gene that resists the HIV virus, which means I never got infected. And his other son, Jake, also has the same gene.
Unbelievable.
So he never got infected.
Well, thank God for that. You know, thank God some good came of it. But being a big Coronation Street fan, Coronation Street.
Hey? Have you gone from AIDS to Coronation Street?
Because they've got a character there now who's got HIV.
Oh, I see.
It's ludicrous, right? Coronation Street have gone across the remit of every social ill. So, you know, suddenly a character's introduced who's got that ridiculous up-and-down mental condition. What's it called?
What, bipolar?
Bipolar.
Well, how's it ridiculous?
It's ridiculous.
Well, some people have bipolar.
Yes, I know people have bipolar.
Well, it's not a ridiculous condition, then, is it?
It's a ridiculous condition in the sense that it's never been properly defined. And bipolar...
Well, that depends on who you talk to.
No, no. If you look at the scientific texts, you know, and I read scientific journals, it's a bipolar cannot be defined. So people self-define bipolar. So, for instance, some people say bipolar is being manic and up here and jumping up around all that and, you know, excessive drinking and taking your clothes off, running up down the street, and then the next minute, appearing on top of a building, threatening to kill yourself, you know?
Well, I mean, I think, once again, you're being slightly simplifying
I think that's a mental illness which doesn't need defining.
Well, the point is that there are definite... There are definite sort of symptoms of being bipolar. I've known people who are bipolar, so that's why I'm telling you you shouldn't be out there telling people it doesn't exist.
No, I didn't say it doesn't exist. I said it's very, very hard to define, okay? Yes. And like a lot of Some of the mental illnesses is that because you can't see it,
yeah.
people take different interpretations exactly. of it, including psychiatrists, yeah. even very clever yeah. psychiatrists, so don't even, always agree.
So even you yeah. should not be yeah. trying to identify it then, should you?
Well, I'm trying to bring some reason to the whole thing. Okay. Yeah, that's
I would recommend yeah. against you doing
now,
that.
Now, talking about medical conditions,
you make a lot more enemies
right.
than you make friends.
Yeah, I have enormous sympathy for anybody who has a mental condition. I fear I may have one myself.
Really? So, which one do you think you've got?
Well, I'm not sure. But it hasn't been diagnosed yet, you know what I mean?
Wankeritis.
Well, that's not really nice, is it? I mean, that really is quite brutal, isn't it? Eh?
Well, not brutal at all. Listen, I can make a remark about you,
yeah.
but what I won't
yeah.
do,
yeah.
and because I know you well enough, mm. right, but what I won't do is yeah. go, oh, don't worry, yeah. you know, bipolar doesn't exist, yeah. you can't yeah. tell anybody
no,
what you've
no,
got it.
What I said
you
is...
You don't do that.
I said, from even my scientific journals, it's very hard to define.
You know, there are a lot of people who listen to us who yeah. suffer with mental stress.
And I have and the greatest sympathy
issues, right?
for them, you know that.
What I don't want you to do yeah. is to make out that they're all talking bollocks.
They're not. What I'm doing is I'm on their side. What I'm saying is,
too often,
doctors try to compartmentalise mental illnesses,
really?
And they've compartmentalised bipolar, mm. whereas in fact it could be, you know, one of several things,
okay.
or a combination of several
it
things,
could.
You know,
yeah.
and bipolar
yeah.
in itself is not...
I don't understand why you're going on about
it. It's not an end, it's
yeah.
a means to an end.
Okay.
Right, okay.
All right.
Now, talking about medical...
Anything else you can talk about?
Yeah, I'm talking about health conditions,
yes.
right.
go on.
Since I last saw you, mm. I have read a report in one of my scientific journals.
Oh, yeah.
Family doctors miss heart failure symptoms in thousands of cases.
Yeah,
right?
Now that I can understand.
Right.
So
now,
that's a story that everyone can get their heads around.
I'm a victim of this.
You are not a victim of
I'm a victim of this.
How are you a victim of it?
I'll tell you, hmm. because everybody knows that my heart collapsed in 2004.
Well, that's what you say.
At the, what do you mean?
Well, you claim, that
yeah.
you had fatal... what's it called?
Acute heart failure.
Acute heart failure.
I still have.
Well, you haven't.
I have.
If you had acute fucking heart failure, you'd
yeah.
be dead.
No. No,
yes, you would.
No, I take medication to keep it going.
Yeah, but if you
stopped taking
no,
medication, I'd fucking collapse.
No, but hang on.
You haven't got much sympathy, have you?
No, I've got no sympathy.
No.
Because, one, there is no evidence there's anything wrong with you.
Oh,
two,
yeah.
I mean, I've never seen anyone else who's got acute heart failure
yeah.
who can spend
They're
the
not
amount
as brave
of time...
As me.
Who can spend the amount of time that you spend
They're not as
in
brave
pubs,
as me.
That can spend the amount of time that you spend working...
They don't...
Spend the entire amount of fucking time running around in the street like some deranged
They don't
lunatic.
Attack it face on like I do, right?
Bollocks.
Anyway, so everybody knows that, you know, I
they
collapsed...
They missed it because it wasn't there. You did not collapse. You walked into a hospital in East London and said, I'm feeling a bit breathless.
No, I didn't.
You
no,
did. Where
no.
did you... What, now you're telling me you collapsed.
I collapsed in Portugal.
When?
Had to be brought home on a plane
That's
from
not
Portugal.
True.
Is it absolutely true?
Not true.
And if Jim Brown, was still alive,
oh,
sadly
he's
not. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
What a shame he can't
was my,
actually.
He was my producer.
Oh, what a shame
Jim
he can't
Brown,
tell the story. Who else was there with you?
Jim Brown. Well, you
what
know,
about
Jim
Mr.
Brown
Brazil?
Had to carry me over his shoulder out of a football.
You weighed a fucking ton. Nobody could have carried you.
Well, I did because I had six
full of water.
Stone of extra water weight. That's right. But fortunately, Jim Brown was very fit.
Yeah, well, he's dead now. So, I mean, how do you figure that?
Yeah, yeah.
So you, the one with the acute heart failure, is still alive.
Yes.
But he was very fit, is now dead.
Yes, that's right.
There's a bizarre
carried me out of the Portuguese football stadium, carried me back to the hotel.
Who else saw you collapse?
On the blink of death. Loads of people saw me collapse.
Like who?
Paul Breen-Turner saw me collapse in Madrid.
I'm not asking him.
2 weeks
earlier. He's for 20 quid.
Outside the Bernabeu,
no.
I collapsed.
What about...
Mr. Brazil saw me collapse.
Oh,
sorry,
should we get Mr. Brazil on one of these podcasts?
Well...
And he can tell the story from his perspective.
I haven't got time to do that. But anyway, the point of the story is, for 3 or 4 months before I went to Portugal, I had complained incessantly to doctors of shortness of breath, lack of energy.
Were these doctors you ran into in the pub, or did you actually go to a GP surgery?
Not only did I go to GP surgeries, I went to private doctors. I thought I might have a collapsed lung, so I went to see a lung specialist.
Were you still
okay.
smoking in those days?
No, I've never smoked. Never
you
smoked
never
properly.
Smoked.
Well, not since my 20s, you know.
That's rubbish.
But, no, it's not. No.
There's a video out there, which is on the Two Mics Twitter account, which is from earlier this year.
Yeah, I know, but that's
which has had about 50,000 views, where it shows you very clearly talking to my daughter and smoking a cigarette.
One cigarette a month. Is,
well, that's still smoking.
No, you don't understand. One cigarette a month can open up those.
You see
those
again. You're
porous
giving out,
part
no,
of your lungs.
So you're giving out the wrong advice to people.
Of your lungs.
People
one
will think that it's
month,
safe.
You know.
No, you can't.
No. Let me tell you this. So,
if there's anyone with your heart, you would die the moment you start smoking.
No. So for months, I go to see separate doctors: lung doctor, skin doctor, everything.
Uh-huh.
Right? You know,
skin doctor.
Yeah, skin doctor. Because I thought
Why?
I might have skin cancer. Right?
Why do you think that?
Because I've got this blob on the end of my nose, which I'm having taken off.
What do you mean recently?
I had another one in those days.
Oh, so you've had, or if you had the skin cancer for 30 years.
Well, not 30, 14. 14 years since acute heart failure.
That's more bollocks. You can't have skin cancer for 14 years.
Listen, just please. So I go to all these doctors and they all say, well, we think it's fatigue, we think it's this. One fucking idiot doctor said to me, do you know what? You work so hard, you are terribly stressed out, and your nervous system is locking up on you.
Is that right?
Around your chest, which makes it hard for you to breathe.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you a course of sedatives for 3 weeks.
Oh,
okay,
good idea that.
So yeah, so I go.
So you're
home,
wondering about like a zombie.
I go home with these sedatives, and I think to myself, I don't think this doctor's got it right. Mm. And this was a Harley Street doctor. No. Went to a Harley Street clinic, right?
Okay, so I went to get my teeth done.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I'm sure he wasn't a dentist.
No, wasn't a dentist. So. When I eventually ended up in hospital on the heart transplant list, and I told Dr.
Once
Bannon,
again, I should point out you're the only person who's ever left the transplant list without dying.
Yes, that's right, I am.
Everyone else who leaves the transport
miracle.
List,
no.
transplant list is
no,
dead.
No, I'm a medical miracle. So when I went through it all, I was told, on good authority, had I taken those tranquilizer tablets, I would have died.
Really?
Because I was
have
so
still
ill.
Got them?
Maybe I have, yeah. I was... Oh, that's supposed to be a little barb, is
well,
it?
Well,
yeah.
Take him tonight.
So if I'd have taken those tranquilizers on top of the acute heart failure I was suffering, which I hadn't diagnosed, that would have slowed my system down so badly I would have died.
Really?
The person who found out I had acute heart failure was a woman X-rayographer, okay? Uh-huh. Okay?
X-rayographer.
Radiologist.
Yeah, I think that's the preferred nomenclature.
And so I go in to see another X-ray.
Yeah.
To do another x-ray.
Why has this turned into another fucking story about you?
Hang on. I stand there. She sees the x-ray plates. In these days, you don't get x-ray plates. In those days, you did. These days, it all appears on a computer screen, okay?
I think, did they not still do that thing where they chug them up on the screen?
No, they just get them on a computer screen now.
Yeah, but you can't see them all then, can you? I still prefer them to be put up
They can. They just get them all next to each other.
But they're not as big.
Well, I don't know about that, but I mean, there's nothing like seeing the movies
where they've got the big light box up on the wall and they chuck them up there.
Well, anyway, they put the light box on the wall for me, right? And this woman looked at them. She said, what did your doctor say you were suffering from to send us here, to send you here? And I said, he said, I've got an infection on my lung.
Yeah.
She said, you haven't got an infection. I said, you're not a doctor. She said, I'm a radiologist. I've been doing it for 30 years.
Right.
She said, see all those black blobs that he says is an infection? That's water.
Hmm.
I said, water? So I've got, like, water on the lungs.
Lungs. She said, lungs full of water?
Yes. And she said, and do you know what that means? I said, no. She said, that means heart failure.
Yeah.
That's where you get water on lungs, heart failure. Please, take these back to your doctor and show him. So I did. Yeah. And the doctor said, she's right.
Yeah.
I was in Kingston Hospital that night, having 9 litres of water drained off my lungs and out of my body.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
It wouldn't have been quicker to just turn you upside down, wouldn't it?
So you are a complete idiot.
So, we haven't got a lot of time left.
Yes.
Is there any chance we can talk about a couple of stories which has got nothing to do with you?
Well...
Because, I mean, I feel as though I've been bombarded with personal stories. Have you seen, by the way, there's a pub in London now selling a beer which is so strong...
£22.50.
£22.50 a pint,
about?
Yeah. But it's so strong, apparently, that you're not even supposed to drink a pint of it.
No, you're supposed to have half a pint.
Yeah, do you not think you and I should go there and have a pint?
No, I'm not going to pay £22.50 for a beer. It's mainly based on... cocoa, and
it's apparently very bitter tasting.
Yeah, and it's a coffee bean. It's a coffee bean based.
Well, it's still beer though.
Why would you? Why on earth?
Well, because Two Mics TV, is involved in lots of different bits of films of us doing lots of different things. We've got the Fleet Street Tales. We've got the Full Disclosure, which is you and I argue about a particular subject. We've got the News Review. We've got the Two Mics in the Kitchen, Mike Graham Kitchen, and you've been doing a bit of that.
Yeah.
You know, I suggest to you, because I've got this other idea.
People love my presence in your kitchen, by the way.
Well, they liked the Fish Finger Pyramid, although, I have to say, I looked at it, and it's not a pyramid.
Tis.
No, it's not a pyramid.
Tis.
It's a collection of fish fingers.
No, it's a pyramid.
It is not a pyramid.
Tis a pyramid.
A pyramid has to be pointy at the top.
It was.
It wasn't.
It was. There were two in the middle, it was pointed out to the top.
I've seen it. It was not pointy. But here's my next challenge to you, right? I was driving around in darkest Kent the other day.
Yes.
And there's only one place in the country where you can do curling, right? You know when the Winter Olympics is on?
Yeah.
And everybody gets very excited about the curling. Well, the curling,
in England?
Yeah, there's
thought,
one.
I thought that was a Scottish thing.
It is a Scottish thing, but there is one place.
Where do they get the stones from Kent?
Well, I don't know, but they may have to bring them down. Maybe they bring them from the same place they brought the Stonehenge stones. I don't know. But anyway, they bring these stones, right, down to Kent. Mm. And I drove because I was avoiding traffic. I was driving home last Saturday, actually, after the job that we'd done. Mm. And I found myself driving past this place. So I know where it is now, right? Because it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But I think we should go there and have a curling match and film it for Two Mics TV.
That's a good idea.
I think we should do that.
I think I'd be good at that because my judgment on things like that is really quite precise.
Well, it's a bit like bowling, except you're on ice.
Yeah. Talking about...
And with the brush and everything. I think it'd be funny.
Talking about competition, by the way, right. So you and I have Two Mics TV, and it's great, and it's all digital and subscription and that kind of stuff. Now, two YouTubers...
Yes.
And we're both aware of this story.
Yes. Well, I was the one, I think, that highlighted it to you.
I think you are.
Because, in fact, it was my son who highlighted it to me.
Right.
Because he's 14.
Right.
And knows who these characters are.
You did indeed. But I was the first one to find out the enormity the enormity of the wealth you can make out of these things.
No, you weren't. I was telling you this last weekend because I told you.
But I was the one who told you they made 40 million quid each.
Yeah, well, I told you it was one of the biggest fights of all time, right?
Yeah.
Except... It's actually not a very interesting thing to watch.
No.
But because they've got so many followers, I was one that told you that one of these guys...
Wasn't one of them called Scree or something?
Logan Paul.
Or Kiss.
No,
or
he's
Cree.
He's got three letters. Yeah. I'm going to put them in order for you in a minute.
Right.
But Logan Paul, who's the American guy, has got 4.3 billion views on his YouTube channel.
Billion?
4.3 billion.
Good God.
I told you that.
Billion views. How many followers has he got?
Several. 20 million, 30 million, something like that.
That's amazing. Who's the other guy?
The other guy is somebody called KSI, I think it is.
KSI, that's right.
KSI, I'm pretty sure.
Anyway.
But it was a draw.
They have this match, and 800,000 people paid $10 to download it on a stream to see it.
Yeah.
That's 8 million. But actually, with all the promotional advertising around it, they've made 80 million.
Yeah, no, I know.
Made 40 million each.
Yeah.
Now, why can't we get into that sort of business?
Well, we could do, but you don't have that kind of following, I'm afraid.
And well, neither do you.
No, I know that.
But I'm not going to a boxing ring and fight with you like that. We should maybe do something more intellectual.
Well, this is why I'm saying we should
start... Like a quiz, evenly based quiz. On a level playing field where I will massacre you, thrash you across the floor intellectually.
No, you couldn't do that, even if you had somebody else to help you.
No.
What I'm suggesting is that we do a curling match instead, which would be far more interesting.
Curling's boring.
No, it's not.
It's fucking slow
and boring.
And I'll
play you in any game you like. All you do is
you go up. Do you know that people who do curling...
You've never done curling, have you?
Do you know they wear two separate shoes?
What?
They wear two separate shoes.
Yeah, I think I do know that.
Because one of the shoes has to grip the ice and the other one has not to grip the ice so you can slide on it.
Yeah, but I think it's a very interesting game and I think you and I should do it.
It's not interesting.
Yes, it is.
It's slow, it's fucking boring.
All right, then I'll play
pushing
tennis.
Pushing stones around on ice.
I'll kick your ass at tennis. People would pay to see that.
You can't.
Why not?
Because I've got acute heart failure.
Oh, right,
I can't
so
run around a tennis
any
court.
Real games. What about table tennis?
Yeah.
Can table you play
tennis?
That?
Well, it would be a strain because it's intensive
work.
See,
you're just a pussy at the end of the day.
Maybe drafts. Well, I beat you drafts, you know.
Drafts. What about chess?
Chess.
You don't know how to play chess, do you?
I know how to play chess, but I find it very boring.
How about backgammon?
Backgammon.
You don't know how to play that either, do you?
Not interested in backgammon.
No.
Anyway, listen, I've only got a few minutes left.
Yeah, we have.
And you brought up this beer. I have, funnily enough, got from my drinking journals...
Drinking journals.
...some very good information on beer, right?
By the way, I saw a story about Wetherspoons the other day...
Yes.
...in which, apparently,
yes.
they charge more money now for soft drinks...
They do.
...than they do for alcohol.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
There's something wrong with that. You used to remember your mate Tim... What's his face?
Tim Martin, yeah.
Tim Martin.
Yes, a great man. Great businessman.
Well, you may
entrepreneur.
Say that. How can you charge more for a pint of orange juice than a pint of beer?
Well, it's not quite orange juice. What happens is that the bottled fruit juices are a particular price, okay? Mm. And so if you ask for a pint of it, you'd have to have two of them into a pint glass.
Yeah, but it's still more than beer, though.
It is more
that
than beer
be right.
because Mr. Martin is a very clever man and buys beer at the premium time where he can get it for price X and then just by putting a 10% premium on it, sell it at price X plus 10%.
But should he not be, in fact, encouraging people not to get bladderated and he should encourage them to drink soft drinks once in a while?
Oh, well...
What happened to your Bladder in Modo campaign?
Yeah, my Bladder in Modo campaign is going on. And in fact, you'll be offering something up on there this week on TMTV.
I will be.
But what I was going to say is that, of course, they do not encourage excessive drinking in any way, but they do sell beer very cheaply for the working man,
yeah,
which is a very good thing.
Yeah, well, most of the people in Wetherspoons don't look like they're working. They don't look like they've worked for a long time, to be honest.
I think that's very insulting to people
incorrect.
Who use... Wetherspoons is a family pub.
No, yeah.
You see lots of people in there.
You
with
take
the,
kids in there, do you?
Yeah, you take kids in there and you have...
You take your kids into a pub?
Yeah, well, you can because it's a family pub and you have lunches and there's children's menus
that's
and all
not
that kind
me.
Of stuff. Well, you what? You've never taken your children into a pub?
Not
then.
Into a pub like
but,
that.
Of course you
Wetherspoons
have.
Wetherspoons is not the sort of place I take my kids.
Oh, really? What's wrong with Wetherspoons?
It's full of ruffians. That's what it's full of.
Oh, that's a disgraceful
thing to say. It's full of drunks. It's full of people who don't know how to stop drinking.
It's one of the biggest chain pubs in this country.
Yeah, exactly.
Therefore, it caters to the masses.
No.
So what are you being
incorrect.
A fucking snob for,
I'm
right?
I'm not being a snob.
I'm a man of the working classes.
See how upset you get.
I'm the working man.
Yeah, but you're a man that wastes £3,000
man
of
the people.
A couple of fucking pens,
yeah.
But you won't pay more than £2.99 for a pint of beer.
£1.32 for a pint of Ruddles in Gosport.
£1.32?
Yeah, £1.32.
Jesus Christ.
Right, I'll tell you some things about beer, okay? Just to sort of wrap up.
Get
right?
on with it.
Right, beer's the third most popular drink worldwide.
Uh-huh.
Only water, which is free mostly, isn't it?
Well, I wish it was free mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I was the guy that invented the idea. I remember it was in New York in the 80s when I saw the first woman model walking down the street with a bottle of Evian water.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, why would you have a bottle of water?
Yeah.
And if I'd only been that person to have imaginary, come up with the idea.
You just started a water bottling plant.
Yeah, well, you would have gone, can you actually, if somebody had said to you in 1975, you can make $1 million by selling water to people in bottles.
That's right.
You'd have gone, bollocks.
It's like these con men at Blackpool who sell you cans of Blackpool Air. And people actually buy them.
Oh, I know.
They actually buy them.
Yeah.
Right, in October 1814... The biggest brewery in the world was in Tottenham Court Road in London.
Oh, really?
Not very far from here, actually,
not very
from
far
East Stewart's Inn.
No.
Right. The biggest vat burst because it just did, because it was...
What, is this in Tottenham Court Road?
Tottenham Court Road.
No.
Eight people drowned in the resultant flood of beer in the factory. You see what I mean?
So whose brewery was that, does it say?
No, it doesn't say.
Hmm.
But it was known as the Great London Beer Flood.
Blimey.
Because it filled the whole of the warehouse in which it was in, people couldn't get out.
Right.
And they drowned in beer.
What an awful way to die.
Well, I suppose there's worse ways to go.
No,
right.
I don't think you'd want to drown in beer because it's kind of sticky, isn't it?
Yeah, but, I mean, in the Middle Ages, there was no water. There was only beer because water was so polluted.
They must have had water to make the beer.
Yeah, but they had to boil the water to make it pure, and they turned it into beer. What I'm saying is, because cattle used to roam the fields, and, all streams were polluted, you know what I mean, by cattle waste and all that
kind
of stuff.
But they couldn't have all been polluted, could they?
Yeah, they were all polluted.
Well, you just go higher up the stream where there's no cattle infestation.
Well, they had a real problem with water on the stream, because they couldn't keep it pure.
Uh-huh.
So they used to boil it. Once they boiled it, they put yeast in and all the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, hops,
so people barley. Were permanently pissed all the way through the Middle Ages.
I think if I'd been living in the Middle Ages, I'd want to be permanently pissed.
Yeah, that's right,
to be honest, it was so horrendous.
Yeah, they were permanently pissed because they
Bring out your dead!
Well, it was also, there was that, what do they call, a feudal system, where you had to, look after a strip of land for the lord of the manor.
And you had to collect taxes for him
taxes and all that. And then you got a couple of pints of beer at night in the... You know, outside the alehouse, there was a broom. You know that, don't you? That signalled that this is an alehouse.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what became known as the public house, which is the pub today. Yeah.
What was the broom signifying?
The broom signalled, this is a place of beer.
Really?
Yeah.
Why don't they just put some beer outside?
Well, because the broom, was the signal for beer.
The broom?
The broom.
Are you sure?
Yeah, a long broom with, spindles coming out the end.
Why
like
would
a witch's
be a
broom.
For beer?
Well, I don't know, but it was.
Okay.
Right, now then, the Czech Republic is the country where most beer is drunk per capita.
Oh, yeah.
250 pints per person
That's
per
probably
year.
Due to the fact that most of the people that drink it have gone there on stag do's from here.
Yeah, probably.
You know, Brits.
Yeah, it's not very much, though. 250 pints per person per year, that's only 5 pints a week each. That's less than a pint a day.
Yeah, but if everybody's doing it, that means that actually every second person is probably not. So it's probably every second person drinking 10 pints a week.
Okay.
Which is quite... How many pints of beer do you reckon you drink in a week, then?
In a week?
Yeah.
Probably...
I'm talking 7 days, not working days.
Probably 30.
30?
Wouldn't you think?
What about Adrian Charles working out that he was drinking 100 units a week? Right?
Well, a beer is 2 units, so 30 is 60 units.
Right, so you're drinking 60 units of beer.
Yeah.
What else are you drinking?
I've given up wine almost entirely.
Rubbish.
Don't like wine.
That's not true.
No, it is.
That is not
no,
true.
No, it is.
Do you want me to ask Mr. Brazil when the last time was that you had a glass of wine with him?
Certainly, because I was out with him last week and Annie McCoy's, and I didn't have any wine at all.
Really?
I gave up after 5 pints of beer.
Because the last time I saw Mr. Brazil, he told me about having a session with you.
Yes.
He said, he was in a big hurry, he didn't want much, and so I bought him a, he went for the toilet and I bought him a glass of wine.
Yeah.
And he had another five before he left.
Well, that's not true.
That's true.
No, that's just a,
he said to me that he deliberately tricked you by buying you one glass of wine, knowing that you drink it.
Mm.
And then the next time he went to the toilet, he bought you another one.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't leave until you'd drunk them all.
No, I don't think that's true.
That's what he told me.
Right, now then. Here we go.
So hang on. Mm. Let's get back to Adrian Charles.
Yeah.
Adrian Charles has now made a film about himself.
Yes, yeah.
Saying he's realised he had a drink problem without realising he had a drink problem.
Well, he's called himself not an alcoholic, and yet in one of my medical journals this week, I read that a doctor challenged that and said, no, the amount you drink, you are an alcoholic, and get used to it.
Yeah, but it depends on which doctor you talk to, doesn't it?
Well, look, Mr. Brazil and you and I have worked together many, many years, and Al is a really great social drinker, but he's not an alcoholic.
I wouldn't say that.
You couldn't be an alcoholic and get up at 4:30 every morning and do the job he's done for
and
20 years.
And you can come up with all sorts of recommendations and definitions, right, of what an alcoholic is.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I agree with you that if you are, there is such a phrase as a functioning alcoholic.
Mm.
And we've all known functioning alcoholics.
Of course we are.
And eventually they stop functioning.
Yeah.
Well, they stop functioning.
Yeah, they do.
And their life becomes affected by it.
They do.
And so therefore they are alcoholics.
Absolutely.
I don't think you're an alcoholic.
No.
I don't think I'm an alcoholic.
No, I don't either.
And I don't think Alan Brazil's an alcoholic.
Now, I've got a few facts to give you before
we... I don't think
we...
Adrian Charles is an alcoholic either.
No, I don't think he's a heavy social drinker. Right, here we go. Did you know that beer was not even classified as an alcoholic drink in Russia until January the 1st, 2013?
Really?
Before that, it was classified as a soft drink. Right, I'm going to give you a word. Senosilicaphobia.
What?
Senosilicaphobia.
Senosilicaphobia. No idea what that means.
Fear of an empty beer glass in front of you.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
I don't think I know anyone.
I think I might have that. Yeah.
No, I don't think you do.
Yeah.
We've never got a beer glass in front of you here.
No. But if you're in a pub and your beer glass is empty in front of you, you get the jitters, don't you?
No.
You think I need another one?
No.
Don't you?
Well, maybe I'll have to revise my earlier statement. Maybe you are an alcoholic.
No.
If you get the jitters because you have got an empty glass,
right,
I think that's a good sign you're an alcoholic.
You think so?
Yeah.
Right. Now then, research by Guinness itself has revealed that 162,719 pints of Guinness remain each year on the lip of drinkers without being consumed.
What, you mean they order a pint?
No. When you drink a pint of Guinness, it remains on your top lip.
Oh, I got you, yeah.
Right, the amount that remains on your top lip each year is 162,719 pints of Guinness, which never gets consumed because you tend to use the back of your hand to wipe it off.
Isn't that kind of more foam than beer, though?
Well, it's part of the beer.
Yeah.
It's part of the, I mean, what I'm saying is, it's not fresh air.
No.
It's something out of the Guinness glass.
What I'm saying is, and it's an interesting point you make, and I'm not wishing to diminish it, but if you were to say, use a spoon to take the top inch off a pint of Guinness and kept putting it into glasses, you would never really have a pint of Guinness, would you?
No, but the point is, a pint of Guinness is all about the white top, isn't it? You see what I mean?
Do you know what's interesting about Guinness, to me, is that it tastes absolutely magnificent in Ireland. When
everybody
you drink Guinness
it.
In Ireland,
everybody says
I don't know whether you're a Guinness drinker.
Yeah.
I've never really seen you drink a lot of Guinness.
I've never drunk Guinness except in Ireland and at Cheltenham Race Festival.
Yeah. Well, there are two places where I've tasted Guinness and it tastes magnificent.
Yeah.
One is in Ireland.
Yes.
Do you know where the other one is?
No.
Boston.
Boston.
Boston,
Massachusetts.
Has the same Guinness that you can get in Dublin.
They probably ship it out there.
Well, I think they do.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, you can manufacture...
For the Irish community.
Yeah, but they ship it to lots of places.
Yeah.
But only in Boston have I tasted the exact same flavour and the exact same smoothness.
Well, I think a lot
of London, the Guinness is nowhere near as good.
I think a lot of it is about the atmosphere in which you drink it.
Maybe.
So in Dublin, you know you're in Dublin, you're having the crack, you're having a good time, the Guinness tastes great.
Yeah.
At the Cheltenham Festival, the race festival, on day one, when I get in that... When we always get in there first, we get in there and... You know, steal the prime place on the bar in the Guinness stand.
Well, that was when you would do the breakfast show.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
because you finished at 10.
Yeah, they don't open until 11. They don't open the Guinness finish at 11, but they let us in there at 10 past 10. We get the corner and we get the Guinness in, and never mind Guinness, I've never tasted any drink which tasted so good in its circumstances than the Guinness tent at the Cheltenham Festival, where tens of thousands of Irish people, of course, go every year.
Yeah, and millions of pints of Guinness are sold.
Millions,
I would say. We are the Two Mics. That is on the record. More coming soon.
Everybody. everybody knows that my heart collapsed in 2004.
Well, that's what you said.
At the, what do you mean?
Well, you claim, that you had fatal, what's it called?
Acute heart failure.
Acute heart failure.
I still have.
Well, you haven't.
I have.
If you had acute fucking heart failure, you'd be dead.
No. No,
yes, you would.
No, I take medication to keep it going.
Yeah, but if
but
you
if I stopped taking
no,
medication, I'd fucking collapse.
No, but hang on.
You haven't got much sympathy, have you?
No, I've got no sympathy.
No.
Because, one, there is no evidence there's anything wrong with you.
Oh,
I mean, I've never seen anyone else who's got acute heart failure
who
can spend the amount of time... Who can spend the amount of time that you spend...
They're not as brave as me.
That can spend the amount of time that you spend working...
They don't...
Spend the entire amount of fucking time running around in the street like some deranged
They don't
lunatic.
Attack it face on like I do, right?
Bollocks.
I have enormous sympathy for anybody who has a mental condition. I fear I may have one myself.
Really?
So,
which one do you think you've got?
Well, I'm not sure. But it hasn't been diagnosed yet. You know what I mean?
Wankeritis.
Well, that's not really nice, is it? I mean, that really is quite brutal, isn't it?
Well, not brutal at all. Listen, I can make a remark about you.
Yeah.
But what I won't do,
and
because I know you well enough, right? But what I won't do is go, oh, don't worry, you know, bipolar doesn't exist. Yeah. You can't tell anybody
what
got it.
What I said
you
is...
You don't do that.
I said, from even my scientific journals, it's very hard to define.
You know, there are a lot of people who listen to us who suffer with mental stress.
And I have
and
the greatest sympathy
issues,
for them, you know that.
What I don't want you to do is to make out that they're all talking bollocks.
They're not. What I'm doing is I'm on their side.
I don't think you're an alcoholic.
No.
I don't think I'm an alcoholic.
No, I don't either.
And I don't think Alan Brazil's an alcoholic.
Give me all your money. I've got a gun in my bag. I'll blow your head off, right?